The American story is all about individual aspiration and achievement. This is the land of absolutely unlimited opportunity. We can become whoever we want to be. We can go wherever we want to go. It's part of our national myth. Indeed, no society can cohere over time if it doesn't possess some myths that people believe in common.
That's what holds us together. This great American creed that it doesn't matter where you came from, it matters where you're going.
It often seems these days as if all of our cultural institutions and norms that provide the foundation for our American way of life are under attack. The presidency, the U.S. Congress, our courts, our elections, the military, the FBI, the Justice Department, our free press, our freedom to worship as we choose, our universities, our scientists, our sports teams, our political parties, and our tradition of debate and civil discourse, including our manners and our respect for one another as people, all seem to be targets in an increasingly caustic environment on the internet, on television, on talk radio, and in the halls of government. I'm Glenn Moberg. It is against this backdrop that the PBS documentary American Creed was produced and co-hosted by Condoleezza Rice and historian David Kennedy. Coming from different backgrounds and different political parties, the program has as its premise that a unifying set of beliefs, an American creed, can prove more powerful than the issues that divide us. The program features the voices of a diverse group of Americans, including our guest today on Route 51. Tegan Griffith grew up in Wittenberg, Wisconsin. She joined the Marines at a young age, became a student leader at UW-Stevens Point, and is now a leader of Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. And today, just a few days after Memorial Day, we'll be talking about her experiences and her takeaway from her featured role in American Creed. And we'd like to hear from you. You can give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a question on the Route 51 webpage, wpr.org/route51, and I'll read it on the air. Well, Tegan Griffith, American Creed originally aired in February of this year. What was the reaction like in your hometown of Wittenberg?
It was a very exciting experience. There's like 1,000 people in Wittenberg, and it was big news. They put it in the newspaper and the Enterprise there, and it was a very exciting experience for my grandmother. She grew up there with all of her sisters and her brother, and something like this I don't think has ever happened in Wittenberg, so people were excited.
Well, I know we tried to book you on the show during the program's original run, and you always seem to have another engagement.
Yeah. I was February and March were very busy for me.
Tell us about some of the places you went to and how the people there reacted.
Well, so the first place that I went to was Pensacola, Florida, about a couple days after the shooting had happened at Parkland. And so that was my very first experience outside of the state with American Creed, and there was a lot of hurt. People were looking for answers. I feel like generally the folks that I interacted with were looking to just come together with each other somehow. They were trying to figure out how. I went up to Scranton, Pennsylvania. I was in Cleveland. They flew me down to South by Southwest EDU in Austin, Texas, which I wish I would have been there for a little bit longer because that's an amazing conference to be at, the Educators Conference. Generally, I think people – oh, and then we had two screenings here in Wisconsin. We held one at UW-Stevens Point. And then in the library at my high school in Wittenberg.
You had to do a talk radio show in Cleveland?
Yeah. Yes, I did. Yeah, at the Idea Center there, right in Cleveland.
So, You've gone all over the world. It's made a big impact. How did you get involved? How did they approach you to be in this documentary? Did you approach them? How do you get featured in a PBS documentary? How did it happen?
That's an excellent question, and I ask myself that all the time. How did this happen? I was doing a lot of volunteer work for Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. It's a national nonprofit for post-9/11 era veterans and their families. And I had done I had participated in their annual leadership conference, Storm the Hill. We go out to Washington, D.C., talk to legislators about, at that time, the VA backlog, veterans crisis line, stuff like that. And I had been doing that for quite a while. And through a partnership with an employee that worked at IVA and Citizen Film, they asked, hey, do you have a story? We're looking for a rural female, you know, veteran type story. Do you mm-hmm. have someone? And they said, boy, do we ever. And it took about 6 months worth of interviewing from January up until about June on the phone with the folks at Citizen Film, Sam and Kate. A lot of conference calls in my car on my lunch breaks. I was living in Madison at that time. And
but what was the filming schedule like after they chose you?
Well, they followed me around for an entire week. We had a film crew come out from Chicago, and we actually...
From WTTW, the...
No, Cartomican Films.
Okay.
They sent a crew up here, and they followed me around. So they managed their own lodging. We filmed at the Woodchucks, at a Woodchucks game here in town. So in the film, you'll see some fireworks scenes and stuff like that. That's actually right here in town in Wausau. We filmed in my grandma's kitchen out in Bowler. They literally followed me around. They interviewed my friends John and Sarah in their pool. So they were with me for about a week, the first week in July, just followed me around. We covered ground from Milwaukee up here between Bowler, Wittenberg, and Wausau.
Well, when did you get a chance to see what they'd actually done with this raw footage and put it together? I'm assuming you got to see it before anybody else did.
Well, I'm not sure. So I had received a clip because through Wisconsin Public Television, I had seen maybe a 6-minute type teaser. But even before then, I was invited to the CPB annual conference, a PBS conference in San Diego, California.
Right.
And I delivered remarks at their annual conference, which is amazing. And I was able to see just a little bit of a clip, and then they're like, okay, now go onto a stage, 1,200 people in the audience eating lunch, and speak to them for a couple minutes, you know?
So you pretty much saw the finished product when everybody else did.
A little bit. I saw clips that kept getting longer and longer, and then I was able to log into Vimeo with a password and watch it. So
How did you react when you first saw it? Do you think they did a good job, or are you upset that they left some things out?
No. I was worried that they were going to put more in, because I broke down on camera a couple times and I covered a lot of really intense stuff about my military service and just kind of life in general. And I could not – I remember I watched it by myself with my cats on my lap, and I had, you know, an adult beverage with me, and I watched it on my computer at home. And I was just speechless afterwards, and I didn't really have an idea that Condoleezza Rice was in the film either. I had no idea who the other people were.
So you didn't actually get a chance to meet Condoleezza Rice or David Kennedy?
The only time I've been given a chance to meet up with all of them, there was a nor'easter, and it shut down LaGuardia, so I was on my way to Milwaukee, and I wasn't able to meet up with any of them. Nobody was able to because of the storm.
Well, they're two different very different people. They come mm-hmm. from different backgrounds. Condoleezza Rice grew up in the Jim Crow South in Birmingham and later became a Republican and a top official in the Bush administration. David Kennedy is a Pulitzer Prize winning historian and a Democrat. Yet they get along. You know, they like each other and they seem to agree more than they disagree, even though they come from different political perspectives.
Mm-hmm. I think people from different political perspectives can get along every day. We just don't see them in a film that aired on PBS.
Well, as I said in the intro, you know, it seems like all of our institutions are under siege right now. We've lost our manners in this country. We've replaced reasoned discourse with insults. Our politics are polarized. Do you see a solution to that?
Oh, boy. I'm not sure about a solution because I feel like everybody has their own solution for how to kind of air quote fix things. But I think manners would probably help. Please and thank you, being kind to folks. I mean, I don't think that's too hard to ask. And I don't know where we kind of lost that. So the insults, you know, the name calling, I really feel like these are warnings that we give to little kids to learn how to properly behave, you know, with their schoolmates when they're first starting out in school. And I feel like I had a master sergeant one time in the Marine Corps who always said, you got to get back to the basics. And I think if we get back to the basics of treating each other with respect and respecting different perspectives and just accepting them and then kind of going forward, I think we're going to start to be a little bit better and kind of ease that anxiety that everybody carries.
Do you agree or disagree with the central premise of the documentary that there's a unifying set of beliefs, an American creed, that can prove more powerful than the issues that divide us?
I think so. You know, I talk about service to others in there. That has nothing to do with political parties or who represents you or anything like that. So I think what I talk about, service to others and volunteerism, I mean, we get back to stuff like that and focus on stuff like that that can only really bring us together more than we are now.
Well, let's listen to a short clip from the documentary. Here's a segment where you talk about the importance to you of serving your country in the Marines.
I always like to say that I could go on a road trip around America and I'd have a place to stay in every state because of being in the military. I love that sense of community no matter what. We know that we have that common bond of service. I was 21 when I joined the Marine Corps. My grandpa was in the Army. My dad had been in the Army the whole time I was growing up. My little brother joined the Marine Corps right out of high school. And I got the bug. There's a picture that somebody took of me waiting for our plane to load to go overseas. Deep down inside, I was probably pretty nervous, knowing that I was getting out and doing something at the heart of what is important to my family, serving a nation during a time of war.
If you just joined us, that's a clip from the PBS documentary American Creed, featuring our guest on Route 51, Tegan Griffith. She grew up in Wittenberg, joined the Marines, and is now active in the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. If you'd like to talk to Tegan, give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Tegan, service is obviously really important to your family. I read that there's been somebody in the military since World War I.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's been a Griffith male. For the record, the males in the family on my dad's side, we have a long history of service in the military.
In the documentary, you talk about the impact of the 9/11 attacks on you and your family. You were a sophomore at Wittenberg-Burnhamwood High School. What were you doing that day, and where did you view the television coverage of the attacks?
Well, I was in study hall in our cafeteria at the high school, and I remember seeing some teachers. I mean, it's not a big school, so I remember seeing some teachers wheeling TVs around in the hallway, and then I remember, I think it was our history teacher, Mr. Bartletti, that rolled one into the cafeteria and plugged it in and just left it. And we were all, you know, oh, cool, somebody brought a TV to study hall, you know, and they turned it on, and that's what everybody's watching. So until, you know, every classroom after that had some form of it on, and the teachers just looked kind of drained, you know, not entirely sure. I mean, we all probably did. I remember driving home after school that day and realizing how quiet the sky was because, you know, they had grounded all the planes. And it was quiet. You know, people were lined up at the gas station, stuff like that. But I remember watching it in my high school cafeteria.
I was working as the assignment manager at WAOW Television here in Wausau, Channel 9 at the time. And I remember Melissa Langman turning around to me and saying, nothing will ever be the same again.
Yep. Yeah. It's not. Or it hasn't been.
How did that change you as a person?
Well, at the time, the young man that I was dating, that became his career choice, top career choice, that also became the career choice of probably seven or eight other folks in my class. And we only had about, 80-some in my class altogether. And that became the career choice for everybody.
Joining the military.
Didn't matter what branch. College. I commend everybody that went to college right out of school. But at that time, in a very rural setting, the folks that didn't have a path or a way to pay for college, well, okay, here we go.
Your family?
Yeah, my dad went to Iraq first. I was working with him actually at the old Wassa Imports here in town. I was washing cars, and he was a service writer. And he deployed to Iraq first. And then my brother Tyler, went to Iraq second. And then my brother and I went to Iraq together in 2008. He was just up the road from me at Al-Asad.
What were you doing in Iraq?
I love this part. So I was trained as an aircraft maintenance administration specialist, but there's a collateral duty that folks with that MOS, that job specialty, have as a technical librarian for a squadron of helicopters. So I went over to Iraq as part of our quality assurance shop. Mm-hmm. And ran a technical library. I had my own little, we call them 7 cubes, but I had my own little containers. Yeah,
so you were providing support in a way to keep those helicopters flying.
Yep.
I read in an interview in which you say there are 16 Marines who served with you that are no longer alive today. Talk about that.
Well, I think that's a question that a lot of women vets don't receive, mostly because I feel like a lot of the ladies can probably relate that a lot of times we aren't even recognized to begin with that we served in the military, and that's kind of a struggle. So I remember right when I first came to college, I got into a verbal tangle with another male veteran who said something to me about, well, you know, you were support for this attack helicopter squadron. What do you know about, you know, being in infantry and losing people? I'm like, well, you know, I had aircraft shot out of the sky, you know. Friends of mine were killed in motorcycle accidents. My last day in the Marine Corps, I was at a funeral for an aircraft mishap. So, you know, I think about those people every single day. And when I have a bad day, or I'm throwing myself probably a more ridiculous pity party, I try and put them forward in front of me and think about, you know, like they'd probably think you're pretty ridiculous right about now, and, you know, kind of pull yourself up.
It's a somber occasion, Memorial Day, and it just happened on Monday. I've got a friend who's an Iraq war veteran who lost his son in Iraq, and he says the worst thing you can say is happy Memorial Day. He says it's like saying happy funeral.
Right. Yeah. Happy is, you know, barbecues and getting on the boat and stuff like that, which is fine. But when you say it to a veteran, you're kind of like, well, he's right. Your friend is right. We immediately think in our head, well, what's so happy, you know?
But yet our president, our commander in chief, sent out a tweet that morning saying, quote, "Happy Memorial Day. Those who died for our great country would be very happy and proud at how well our country is doing today." And he ends the tweet with the word "nice" with an exclamation point. That tweet was widely criticized as inappropriate. What's your reaction?
I think less is more. I don't necessarily follow that the president on social media, mostly because as a comm major who studied social media, it's kind of hard to watch message after message like this. And in the Marine Corps, we had a thing called tact. And I think if a lot of his messages could probably go through a tact filter. But this specific tweet probably could have been chopped down a little bit more. I didn't think he needed it to be. It didn't need to be like that. I think he tweeted later on something a little bit more respectful from Arlington. But, you know, there's a lot in this one tweet. And he probably could have exercised a little bit more tact.
Yeah, the public has a very low impression right now of many of our institutions today, the government, our political parties, the press. But the military is still ranked relatively high. Why do you think that is?
People love to support the military. They like yellow ribbons. They like flying their flags. They like to support us in general. I think the more stories that they hear of folks who served in the military and volunteering, I think volunteering to serve our country is just pulls at the heartstrings of everybody. And so that's something that they can get behind and support.
You're listening to Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio with our guest Tegan Griffith. She's a Marine from Wittenberg, Wisconsin, who was featured in the PBS documentary American Creed. I'm Glenn Moberg. We'd like to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-780-9742, 1-800-780-9742, or put a question or comment on the Route 51 webpage. That's WPR.org/Route 51, and I'll read it live on the air. We're going to take a short break. Here's music from Sugarland.
Take a stand when liberty's in jeopardy. I will always do what's right. I'm out here on the front lines. Sleep in peace tonight. American soldier.
Toby Keith taking us into our next segment of Route 51 with our guest Tegan Griffith, a Marine from Wittenberg who was featured in the PBS documentary American Creed. I'm Glenn Moberg. We'd like to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a question or comment on the Route 51 webpage, wpr.org/Route 51, and I'll read it live on the air. You can view the documentary at pbs.org/program/American-Creed. It is scheduled to be rebroadcast later in June, but we don't have specific dates yet. So check your local television listings. You grew up in Wittenberg, Tegan Griffith. How did that experience mold you?
Oh, I think it gave me an appreciation for the folks that make up these tiny little rural towns that I feel like a lot of people generalize about and kind of fly over or don't really pay attention to. So, I mean, thank goodness. So I grew up without social media. I grew up where I could ride my bike until dark with my brother and sister, and we'd be all over town on our bikes. And there's a Ben Franklin with a candy aisle. I mean, really, it's like the quintessential small town America.
Well, let's listen to another clip from American Creed. This one is about exactly that, you growing up in Wittenberg, Wisconsin.
Well, I feel like people from rural areas know what hard work and dedication is. And we're patriotic. And, you know, it's common knowledge that people that live in rural areas, for the most part, are not millionaires, unless you have a vacation home. I think that's what allures a lot of people to join the military. It's a great benefit to serve your country and be able to afford putting food in the mouths of your children. Growing up, you know, we didn't have a lot of money. We always felt like the underdog, kicking and fighting. We had to work for everything that we had, and the military was our career path.
I mean, it's not like we were the MacArthurs or anything. You know, bottom line, you volunteer to go out and be a bullet catcher or be a bullet launcher, one of the two.
Prefer launcher.
Yeah, prefer launcher. I mean, obviously the consequences are grave, but or could be grave, but you... Oh, just do it.
That's a clip from the PBS documentary American Creed with our guest Tegan Griffith, who was featured in that documentary. Tegan, that last voice, there is your father, Glenn Griffith, who says you're either a bullet catcher or a bullet launcher. That's pretty stark.
Yeah, well, that's my dad for you. he's the speaker of truth. He went over to Iraq first, and he was there very early, and my brother and I were there very late. So we have, you know, kind of, we saw that country in a different light. And He's the speaker of truth. He's got a lot to say, and he said quite a bit in the film, but that's what they caught.
You talk about the struggle of growing up in rural America. Do you think the realities of rural life are appreciated by those who grow up in cities or suburbs?
I think it's not so much about appreciation. I think it's more about like curiosity and admiration. I think a lot of folks in cities are, while my food comes from a farm that, is in a rural area, and oh my gosh, my kid's taking a trip out to the farm where my food may have come from. Let's get on a school bus and go see this farm. So I think it's a more admiration for mm-hmm. the rural folks, because I feel like folks in the rural areas tend to do a lot of the work that a lot of folks kind of neglect or don't want to do.
Well, there's an obvious urban-rural divide in this country. You just look at the election results in 2016. The urban areas went overwhelmingly for Hillary Clinton. The rural areas went overwhelmingly for Donald Trump. Is this healthy that our political parties are increasingly breaking down to where you happen to live? It's like that determines what your politics is going to be. Is that healthy?
Well, I don't think the 2016 election is the first time that's happened, but what worries me is that it's down to, the street and your neighbor down at the corner who has a sign in their yard that you don't agree with. What's happening in the local community that it's dividing your neighbors? I overheard a conversation at Starbucks earlier this year where folks were saying that, I was a student at UW-Stevens Point at the time, and this group of students were saying, well, I can't even stand to live with my roommate anymore. And it's like, whoa, 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 whoa. Before you were just fine. You could live with them just fine. And now I think it's the polarizing. It's the local polarization that bothers me, where people will make an effort to avoid somebody else.
Well, the Democratic Party has lost a lot of support of its traditional base in rural America. Now, if you're in Minnesota, they still call it the Farmer Labor Party. But many farmers and working class people no longer vote for Democrats. They claim that the party no longer shares their values. I suspect some of that has to do with the issue of gun control. But do you think this is a long-term phenomenon or something that can be reversed in another election? And what would the Democratic Party need to do that?
I think the farmers that I know that voted Republican, I mean, they did it with their heart, and that's where they stand. And I get a creeping sense that they might be changing their mind. They might be wobbling. They might be digging deeper into, how is the Republican Party acting on my behalf? And what are the Democrats doing? What are other folks doing on my behalf? So I think they're starting to dig a little bit more deeper and look into things and kind of question the motives of the party that they chose to vote with.
Well, meanwhile, let's look at the Republican Party. Now, they've got abysmal levels of support among minorities. The vast majority of Hispanics and up to 90% of Black Americans vote for Democrats. You've got a president who has a reputation for allegedly racist remarks. And just this week, one of his supporters, Roseanne Barr, was fired for comparing a Black woman to an ape. Mm-hmm. Now, with all that baggage, how does the Republican Party turn that around and rebuild the support that it once traditionally had with minorities? Black people used to vote Republican.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think first off, I'm going to go back to that tact thing. I studied communication and a public relations emphasis. We had professors who taught us about crisis communication and tact and your messaging. And I think they're really going to have to evaluate how their messages are being received. You can put together a message all you want and put it out there, but how is it being received by these different populations of folks? How are they reacting to it? Are they sharing it? Do they believe it? And why do they believe it? So I think, boy, I think as somebody who tends to err on the more cautious side of things when I speak publicly, I think they should maybe kind of evaluate what it is that they're saying and how their supporters are reacting. I mean, we had a bipartisan forum on campus a couple months ago, and I saw a student who identifies as one political party refuse to shake the hand of an elected official in another public party, in another party. And just that he wouldn't shake the hand of this person, just that bothered me.
Right.
And the, you know, that party that he belonged to kind of cheered him on a little bit. And I'm like, you know, what kind of example is that setting? So I think there's improvement on both sides, but I really think that maybe we should look and not be so reactionary to how we're putting the messages out there.
Yeah, we should mention, too, that American Creed is co-hosted by Condoleezza Rice, that rarest of all things, a black Republican woman.
Right, right.
The military used to be segregated in this country. Now, you're too young to remember that, but you know, I was born in 1952, so until just after World War II, just a few years after I was born, and now it doesn't matter who you are or what your ethnic background is. If you're in the military, you're on the same team. Can that provide a template for the rest of the country?
Well, I hope so. I mean, I want to go back on that comment that you just made. I mean, we have the transgender troops who have served for quite a long time honorably and alongside all of us without issue, and that comes up. Their identity and whether or not they're, you know, air quote, fit to serve comes up in the news all the time. And that bothers me so much because, you know, we all serve together. At the end of the day, beginning of the day, very dark, early morning, we all put on the same uniform. We're all there to do a job together. And, you know, I've gotten in trouble for saying that we all look alike when we come from, I mean, we are a melting pot of people from everywhere in the military, which I absolutely loved because I don't think I would have gotten that exposure living in a rural area at all. So we all wear the same uniform. We're all working together. I think we have in the military in general has some internal issues that they could probably work on. But at the end of the day, we're all wearing the same uniform, doing the same thing.
One of the interesting parts that I found of American Creed was a segment involving Joan Blades. She's the woman who founded the liberal activist group MoveOn.org, and Mark Meckler, a man who founded the conservative activist group, the Tea Party Patriots. The two of them have become close friends. And Meckler took some conservatives with him from his ranch, his rural home, to visit Blades in Berkeley. They were wondering, what do liberals eat? You know, but they sat down together and they were able to get a conversation and an understanding going.
Yeah.
You know, if they can do it.
Yeah, that was one of my more favorite clips of the film. And it's not shown in the TV version, but it's shown on the extended version. You can watch it on PBS, on PBS.org. But their living room conversations, what they called it. And that is such a fantastic model. And the audiences that I have had screenings with around the country, when they see this full version with Joan and Mark's story in there, they love it. That's immediately what I hear in feedback, is that they love this idea.
It sounds like they should have kept it in the broadcast version, you know.
Well, you know, it was about 80-some minutes, so, you know, we had to cut it down a little bit.
Let's play another clip from American Creed. Here's where you're talking about being a Marine and also living with protesters in Madison.
You don't join the military to be in one political party or not. You are a Marine. And you can't pick political sides. But, you know, I live in Madison, Wisconsin. People love to protest. I go out on my lunch break and people are out there with signs and horns and bells and whistles and just hooting and hollering and making all this racket, yelling at the governor on the Capitol. And I think it's cool that they do that. I think the American ideal of citizenship is about service to others, either through military service or volunteerism or advocacy. And it's refreshing to see people paying attention to the government because they bring to light something that other people may have not been paying attention to. And I think that's really interesting. And even if I don't necessarily agree with their opinions, I still appreciate them because that freedom is the fabric of my uniform. You put that uniform on to protect their right to do that.
Tegan Griffith, elaborate on that if you could, that the protests in Madison and elsewhere are part of the fabric of your uniform.
Well, I mean, I guess what people like to boil it down to is that, you know, people in the military protect the rights of others to have free speech, to assemble, stuff like that. So, you know, for me and like how my dad mentioned earlier about it just kind of being so simple that that's what it boils down to. That's really, for us, that's what it boils down to. I know that, I mean, I guess in my lifetime, we haven't really been in a position where their rights were, you know, to assemble were taken away. But it was one of, when I worked down in Madison, it was one of my favorite things to do was to take, make sure I was on my lunch break and walk over to the Capitol and watch the folks who were assembling, who were gathering, who were singing, because they all had something to say. And that takes a lot for somebody to make a public appearance and take a stance in front of a group of folks. So the comment that I made about standing there yelling at the governor, there's actually, when I was still living down there, there was one individual who would stand there and yell at the Capitol directly to the governor's office, and he was loud. You could hear him everywhere. And so when I heard that clip in the film, that kind of made me cringe, because not everybody goes down there to yell at the governor. Not everybody goes down there to do that. It was just this one individual that if you're down around that area and you know who I'm talking about.
You graduated from UW-Stevens Point. You were a student leader. You were active in the Student Government Association as the Communications and Public Relations Director. So you were up close to the student protests there involving the administration's plan to eliminate 13 academic majors in the humanities. What's your perspective on that?
Yep, I was there. and I had to, in my role there, I had to take a very kind of standoffish. I was an observer. I didn't really participate. I felt like I needed to just kind of observe and tweet and share stuff like that on our social media. But I commend the students who are at least a decade younger than me for assembling and gathering and pressing administration, asking for statistics, asking for numbers, asking for the reasons why, and staying on top of this, because there's going to be a lot coming up this summer, and folks are gone, they've relocated, what have you. I think it breaks my heart, because I know a lot of my friends have the potential to be affected by this, and a lot of alumni are kind of like, you know, well, what is the value of my, you know, my experience, my education, my major mean now? So I can tell you that I would not want to be in the shoes of those decision makers there. You can see it on their faces. They look kind of tired and stressed, and, you know, they got a long ways to go. But
do you think we need more funding and more secure funding for higher education in Wisconsin? UWSP has had $9 million in cuts in the past 8 years.
Mm-hmm. I definitely think we do. I believe Stevens Point only receives about 13%. Actually, I got an email from the UWSP Foundation this morning about that very thing. I do. It has been a dream of mine since I was a little kid to attend UW Stevens Point. We measured trees out in the front lawn of Old Main, and that has been my goal for the last 20 years, to have this sense of belonging. And it hurts, you know. It was like when I was in the Marine Corps, where we got funding cut. It hurts to have your organization have funding cut too. So it breaks my heart, and there's a lot more to go. There's a lot to unravel and figure out.
Do you think it will hurt UW-Stevens Point as an institution to redefine its identity so it's no longer a comprehensive university offering majors in English, history, political science, and the fine arts?
I think it's going to hurt the community. The university, I feel like, has already taken quite a beating. But I feel like it's going to hurt the community a lot more. A lot of two of my professors that I had this last semester are already gone. There's houses that are being sold, folks that no longer spend money in the community. So that's I'm worried about that. The university is going to do probably what they're going to do. But
the fine arts department is gone, you know, what does it mean for Stevens Point when you no longer have a center for fine arts?
Right.
It means a lot for the community, not just the university.
Right. Yep.
You're listening to Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio with our guest Tegan Griffith, a Marine from Wittenberg, who was featured in the PBS documentary American Creed. I'm Glenn Moberg. Give us a call at 1-800-780-9742 if you'd like to join the conversation. 1-800-780-9742. Rick from Stevens Point, hang on. We'll get to you right after this break. Here's Woody Guthrie.
There was a big high wall there that tried to stop me. sign was painted, said private property, but on the back side it didn't say nothing. This land was made for you and me. This land is your land, and this land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me.
Left, right, black or white, we all dream about the same things at night. Let's wake up, people, it's time to build a brand new day. We gotta stand together on common ground. We got to band together or we all fall down. Everybody looking for someone to blame. We're not as different as we are.
Tommy Castro taking us into our final segment of Route 51 with our guest Tegan Griffith, a Marine from Wittenberg who was featured in the PBS documentary American Creed. I'm Glenn Moberg. We've got time to squeeze in a few phone calls. Give us one at 1-800-780-9742 if you're so inclined. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a question or comment on the Route 51 webpage, wpr.org/Route 51, and I will read it live on the air. Let's go to the phones right now. We have Rick in Stevens Point, who's been waiting patiently. Rick, you're on Route 51 with Tegan Griffith.
Yes, I got a comment and a question. With all the vitriol and the polarization between the left and the right, I personally don't feel it's going to be the far left or the far right that'll bring down our republic. I feel it's the indifference and apathy between of the 90 million people that did not vote in the last election. And as a communications major, Tegan, I was wondering if you could speak to what are some ideas, how can media and communication in general how can we bring these people into the American process and get them involved in the process of America?
Great question, Rick. Thanks so much for it. Tegan?
Yeah, Rick, great question. I managed four different social media accounts when I was at school at University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point, and I feel like there was a lot of misinformation and a lot of folks that would kind of spread stuff around, and then it would just – folks would tune out. They wouldn't want to pay attention because what they see on the internet is not true or because their friends shared it. I think we should look at the folks. First off, it bothers me that is a large number of folks that did not vote. I think we should look at their reasons why. Did they have access? Did they have a car? Do they have an ID? And some more public campaigns about how did they get to vote to begin with? Why is it important? I mean, I feel like our peers can probably explain to us why it's important, but why aren't they? Do they have the appropriate means to vote? And really take a look at that and get folks involved.
I want to listen to one final clip from American Creed. It featured several individual people, all from different backgrounds. One of them was Joe Madden, the manager of the Chicago Cubs, who grew up in Hazleton, Pennsylvania, an impoverished city in the midst of coal country, which is seeing a backlash against Hispanic immigrants.
It's all about building relationships. As you get to that point where everybody feels respect and trust, now we can really get somewhere.
Here's the 0-1. This is going to be a tough play. Quiet. The Cubs win the World Series!
Back in Hazleton, things are a little bit tough. Everything's been in a steady, slow decline. There's been no real economic boom around here since coal. There's no streetlights. There's potholes everywhere, and all you hear about is all the tension in the city. Wow.
Hazleton Mayor Louis Barletta is now defending the Illegal Immigration Relief Act passed by the city council. The city ordinance would fine landlords who rent to illegals or employers who hire them.
There's so much misinformation going on here. You got to quell the madness at some point. You got to put your foot on its neck. That's why we did what we did.
Play ball.
You want to make kids' friends fast? Put them on the same team with the same common goal. And I promise you, color of skin, language barriers, what you like to eat, that goes away just like that. Make them interact with one another, because I'll tell you what, the parents are going to follow, man. They got to come pick them up. They got to come watch them play. And then at some point, you got to start talking to one another. And I like them. I like this guy. I like this lady. I mean, they're good people.
That's Joe Maddon, the manager of the Chicago Cubs. He organized baseball teams in Hazleton, Pennsylvania, to bring whites and Hispanics together in a segment from the PBS documentary American Creed. Tegan Griffith, we've got a large Hispanic population in parts of Wisconsin, including nearby Abbotsford. In the last 2 years, with the crackdown on immigration, many of those people are living in fear, according to what I've been told by a local Hispanic leader.
Yep. I went to school at UW-Stevens Point with dreamers and folks who are affected by this and folks who no longer attend UW-Stevens Point. And it is a very real feeling and emotion. What they're feeling is being scared. And that makes me sad.
What does it say about our country when we're separating thousands of undocumented immigrant children from their parents, putting them in detention centers, and not letting the children know where their parents are and the parents know where their children are?
Oh, boy. I don't know if I'm qualified to speak on that, mostly because I don't really belong to a demographic that has experienced that. But I will say that it disturbs me. It bothers me. I think I read in the news a couple days ago about the systems. There's not enough funding to track. There's not enough funding to employ people who are supposed to be doing these jobs and taking care of these kiddos. So it makes me sad. It breaks my heart. And unfortunately, it looks like it's a money problem and a decent human being problem.
Well, Condoleezza Rice said, we become polarized in our media coverage. We have conservatives watching Fox News, liberals watching MSNBC, everyone looking for reaffirmation of their basic views. And she said about America, you're going to encounter people not like yourself here if you're constantly in the company of people who say amen to everything you say. You should find other company.
Yeah, or expand your horizon. I mean, you can keep that company, but boy, maybe you should talk to your neighbor or invite somebody else to come over and widen your views a little bit. I mean, you don't have to believe the headlines that you see on other news stations if you don't want to, but boy, sticking yourself in a funnel or, you know, in a cylinder like that is, I don't know, that's feels like you could probably learn a little bit more if you expand your horizons.
What is the American Creed to you? Do you have a belief in an American creed? And if so, what is it?
I think for me personally, it's changed. So American Creed was filmed 4 years ago. So I think my American creed is still service to others. It's taking that grocery cart to the grandma in the Fleet Farm parking lot, still volunteering in your community. I do a lot for veteran service organizations around here, advocating for folks who may be too nervous to advocate for themselves. But mostly I feel like it's being a kind and decent human being to your fellow citizens that live around you.
Tegan, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Oh, well, oh, well, I feel so good today. We just touched ground on an international runway. Jet propelled back home from overseas to the USA.
We want to thank today's guest, Tegan Griffith. You can view the documentary American Creed at pbs.org/program/American-Creed. It is scheduled to be rebroadcast later in June. Check your local television listings. You can find out more about the Iraq and Afghanistan War Veterans of America at iava.org. I'm Glenn Moberg. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Janice Schleiss. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Special music today by Simon and Garfunkel, Ray Charles, Sugarland, Toby Keith, Woody Guthrie, Tommy Castro, and Chuck Berry. Next week on Route 51, we look at the legalization of hemp farming in Wisconsin with Senator Patrick Teston of Stevens Point, Rob Richard of the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation, and Ken Anderson of Legacy Hemp of Prescott, Wisconsin. If you missed a part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety Friday evening at 7 on WHRM 90.9 FM Wausau. It can be downloaded at wpr.org/route51. Thanks again for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin. Until next week, we're heading out of town.